My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. You know, tonight really puts into perspective how they say anxiety is caused by living in the future, because I can't wait till this 10 minutes is over. But my sobriety date's October 1st, 2023. I have a home group. I'm part of a smaller group within the home group. I have a sponsor. And, you know, I bring these things up because of all the people that are involved in all those things. It's why I get to be here and have a sobriety date. For me, growing up, I was shown how to drink responsibly, do drugs responsibly, but it just never took for me. My mom, her drinking, she doesn't drink anymore. I kind of ruined any kind of joy that she might have had with alcohol. And she adopted my 8-year-old son a few years ago, and I mean, she's terrified of what alcohol did to her son and what the potential it has to do to my son. But growing up, I mean, her drinking always looked the same. She drank maybe like 5 times a year, Easter, Thanksgiving, Christmas, maybe a couple dinner parties throughout the year. And she would have a few glasses of wine throughout the day, or white wine, and then she would have a glass of red wine at dinner. My dad, I've never really known him to drink. He's more known for snorting cocaine or smoking weed or eating some mushrooms. But even with that, I mean, there was never any consequences involved. It never took away from, like, family time or family values. It never hindered any kind of financial responsibility that he had. It's just what he did. My siblings, they might have partied, like, at the appropriate age to party, but they all grew up. And then with me, you know, I could remember as a child, I used to be fascinated with my mom's wine opener. Just like the mechanics of it, the way you screw it into a bottle and the arms go up and you pull them down and pulls the cork up and you pull it off and it pops. And she would let me cork her wine for her, with her supervision, of course. And I remember this Thanksgiving, I don't remember exactly how old I was little. And she asked me to go cork the wine on the dinner table so it could breathe before dinner. And I remember when I did this, it smelled really good. And I knew I wasn't allowed to drink alcohol. I knew if I did, there would be consequences. I knew my mom would be mad and sad and disappointed. So I guzzled as much as I could. And it was gross. It was really gross. I didn't even like grape juice, but so I did it again. And you know, I don't know if I remember throwing up. I mean, I know that I threw up all over the place, but I don't know if my memory is like an illustration that I've created because I've heard the story so many times, or if it's an actual memory. But you know, that was the next morning. I was grounded. My mom was crying. My dad was pissed. He was really pissed. And I don't think it had anything to do with what I did, but they put a lot of effort into holidays. And that was the first of many countless holidays that I've ruined. Over the years, I mean, my drinking never got better. I started going to jail a lot. I mean, nothing big, just like 90 days here, 6 months here, a year here. And you know, eventually I broke my leg and I had a few surgeries on it. And I was prescribed so much pain medicine that, I mean, I probably still have some today if I actually followed the instructions on it. But I mean, if one's supposed to help, 25 should probably help more. And, you know, up until that point, like, alcohol was the only thing that ever allowed me to be comfortable living. And then opiates had become the only thing that allowed me to not care about being comfortable. I didn't care about drinking anymore. I didn't stop drinking at that point, but it just wasn't. I exchanged one thing for another. Pills turned into heroin. Heroin turned into fentanyl. And, you know, I hear these definitions of insanity, like expecting different results or knowing exactly what's going to happen and doing it anyway. for me, my insanity at the end was just acceptance. I surrendered to the fact that I was just going to be a worthless piece of shit junkie criminal for the rest of my life. And what had happened was, man, it doesn't matter how many times I tell this part of the story, it's always hard for me. My son was born addicted to fentanyl. Social service got involved right away. My social worker allowed my wife and I to visit our son pretty much as we wanted while he was in the hospital. And I could remember walking down the hallway to go visit him. And I wouldn't even be close to like the few sets of doors that I would have to go through that would get into the waiting room. So the few more sets of doors that I'd have to go through to the area where he was in. And I could hear him screaming in pain. And it's a pain that, like, I know really well. And to know that I did that to, like, something so perfect and beautiful, my son nonetheless, it just made me feel like a monster. And, you know, I'm grateful for DCFS today. They laid out the roadmap pretty much for me. When my social worker presented the what I had to do, she let me know that you could do this and we'll help you, or you could do what you want and we'll traffic your son, pretty much. And you know, I just took it one step at a time. I got into detox. I went to residential treatment. I did IOP, OP. I did mass services, contingency management. I got a therapist. While I was in treatment, I had gotten a sponsor, and I started working some steps. And you know, I got fearful again, and life got lifey, and I just started kind of doing my own thing. I was still going to meetings, but I wasn't keeping in contact with my sponsor. And I had these three friends. Two of them are here tonight. They had this change about them. Like, I went through treatment with them, and we had become really close, and then there was just this real obvious change about them. And, you know, if I tried to put it into words, it would just diminish what it was that I actually saw. But it was easy to see the similarities of what they were doing and what I wasn't. And I just started doing what they were doing. I got a home group. I started getting commitments. They were all part of the sponsorship family. And I knew that I had to get a sponsor that was part of that if I wanted to be part of it. And I didn't want their sponsors. One of them had this, like, AA guru that just has a million years sober. And the other two had this clean-cut dude that just wasn't dirtbag enough for me. Which is funny because he's my sponsor now. But there was this one guy that used to live in dumpsters and live off of King Cobra and Little Debbie's. And you know, I started working with him. And, you know, there's lots of stories of how alcoholics have shown me exactly how they've recovered. But, I mean, this one's one of my favorite. I was in sober living, and I just got approved for random monitor visits. And I didn't have a car, or my son was... His caretaker was like 60 miles away and in a different county. And I had no idea how I was going to get there. And I was venting this to him. And just real nonchalantly, he's like, well, schedule it on my day off and I'll take you. And I did. And I scheduled it for 10 o'clock on a Saturday. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, he calls me. And he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm sleeping. And he's like, well, I'm outside. I got a coffee for you. Hurry up and we'll go. And then... so I did. I came out, threw all my junk in the back of his car, and of course I had to smoke a cigarette before we go, even though he doesn't smoke. I was really inconsiderate. On the way there, my wife calls, and I let her know that I'm on my way to go see our son. And she's like, well, make sure you wash your hands so you don't like transfer any cigarettes or anything like that. And I snap at her right away. I'm like, you did fentanyl with our baby the whole time you were pregnant, and you're gonna bitch at me about a cigarette? And when I got off the phone, he looked at me, and he's like, wow, we have a lot of work to do with you. And you know, just that simple, That simple statement, like, allowed me to see it from a completely different angle. You know what I mean? It allowed me to see, like, all my wife was doing was trying to do the right thing. And here I am doing what I always do, just shifting blame and not taking responsibilities for my own actions. And I guess I'm out of time. Well, we get there and we find exactly where we're going to meet my son. And then we go over to this Dollar Tree and he has me pick out a toy for my son. Because, I mean, I have this intentional love for my son, but he's showing me how to have some action. So, and just get a little simple toy for him that he can take home. We go over to Walmart after that and with my son. And he picks out this toy that my son still plays with today. And it's this little remote control dinosaur. And every time I see it, I think of this day. And then we went back to the pizza place after. We were like an hour early, and he orders pizza and hot wings, and mango habanero hot wings. And he asked me to call the caregiver, and I didn't want to. I didn't like her. But he was teaching me how to have love and tolerance for others. And she didn't want to come anyway, so thank God. But we ended up feeding my son some habanero mango hot wings, and you could tell that he didn't like them. But he was breathing like a dragon and sweating profusely, but he just kept coming back for more. I wonder where he gets that from. But on the way home, I had saved $20 in my wallet, and I tried to offer it to him, and he refused to take it, and he said, if I needed it, I would take it, but these are things that I get to do today. So, like, when I'm asked to come speak, even though I don't like to do it, these are things that I get to do today. Thanks for letting me share.